Welcome to episode 99 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. As most of you know, over the last few weeks, in addition to keeping up my day job, I've been busy with a server transition to a new server because I'd had enough of the old one. And what I've been trying to not sort of say, because I didn't want you to think I was whinging too much about having too much on, is that I'm also doing a kind of a night school thing at the moment at graduate school, doing some finance training. And all this alongside with sort of not sleeping well because of the oppressive heat that we have here in Tokyo at the moment has meant that I was basically just too tired to process the photos that I was thinking of talking about today. So I haven't really been able to prepare for a normal podcast episode this week. Rather than just skip altogether though, I thought I'd share a few things that are on my mind at the moment. The first is not really photography, well, not even slightly photography related, apart from if you're using a computer to post-process, you'll need a keyboard. But I thought that I'd just, you know, reinforce the thing that you all know, which is I'm pretty much of a geek when it comes to technology. So I'm going to talk a little about a new keyboard that I've bought and some other things. And then also I'm going to talk about some recent updates in the Barnack utility that I've mentioned a few times in the past. Isn't it strange how things always seem to break at the most awkward times? After recording the podcast last week, I went back to my PC to finish the preparation and upload the audio files for publishing, and would you believe it, my mouse stopped working. It was a wireless mouse and keyboard in a set that I bought. They basically connect to the PC via Bluetooth. I'd been using them for a couple of years, and you know, every so often though, the Bluetooth connection seemed to drop out. But it was often just a problem with the transmitter or the batteries being low or something like that. This time, though, I found that the Bluetooth transmitter had just died. And just as I was thinking that this was really, it was really strange that the keyboard was still working, that dropped out as well. And so now I've got no mouse or no keyboard. And remember that at this time, I mentioned last week, if you didn't catch up with that, I was actually, while recording, I was in the middle of transferring files and creating mail accounts and everything on a new server that we'll use for the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. MartinBaileyPhotography.com and the MBPGalleries.com websites. And so, you know, I was sort of a little bit panicky doing lots of things at the same time. And then I had to start digging around for an old PS2 mouse, you know, wired mouse as opposed to wireless, and keyboard. And I was looking all over the place. Tokyo apartments are not that big, so the closet space that we have is really sort of chock-a-block. So having fought past loads of other things, I finally realized that the mouse was not in where I thought it was. It was somewhere else. So I wasted like 30 minutes in the middle of the evening messing around with these things. It's not important, though, to what I want to tell you today. I've already started rambling. But basically, plugged those in, got things going. And then sort of over the next few days, when things started to calm down, I'd got the server just about how we needed it to be, with just a few jobs left. And I started to think a little bit about the fact that, you know, maybe it was time to think about a whole new few things, you know, with regards to input on my computer, as it was a good chance, you know, things breaking, it's a bit of a pain, but it's always a good chance to rethink where you are. And so that's what I started to do. I could have just bought a new Bluetooth transmitter possibly, but there was no guarantee that it was going to work with the keyboard. And I decided that it really just a good chance to really to go over to the computer store at the weekend. Now, I have to eat some words again this week, as well as last week. I said last week I ate my words about the Sensoscope, said I'd never buy one. Now I think it's probably the best thing since sliced bread. But this week I'm going to eat a few more words, because I've said in the forum a few times that I'd probably never buy a Wacom tablet. And, really the main reason for that was because I don't do a lot of photo editing. The majority of what I do in Photoshop is spotting out dust and stuff like that. And then some masks every so often to sort of, to overcome the dynamic range issues with the currently available sensors. I'll do that thing where we sort of stick the sky from one frame, and then the next frame where I've gone, exposed for the foreground, and I'll stick those together. So that it would be nice to use a tablet for those sort of things. But I'd really said that I probably wouldn't ever buy one, although I'd been very, very tempted. Now, though, with the wireless mouse gone, a good time to sort of take stock and figure out what was happening. And I figured that this might be a good time to start to see what everyone was raving about with the Wacom tablets. Around then, I started to think, I thought I'd take a look at the Wacom website. Another reason why so far I'd not got into this, I'd not really sort of, gone out and bought one, was because from an early age, my mum always used to say one of her favourite sayings was, if you're going to have one, have a big one. And basically, so what that's done is conditioned me to really sort of go out and buy the biggest and best thing that I can possibly find. It's like the 600 millimeter f4. Most people settle for the 500 millimeters, but oh no, I had to go and get the 600 millimeters. And I do the same sort of thing a lot of the time. So what I was always thinking was, if I'm going to buy one of these Wacom tablets, I'm going to want one that's really sort of huge, and I can do everything that I want and just draw it probably the same sort of scale as I was drawing it on a 19 inch monitor or something. And this had kind of held me back. But what I did was, I don't know if this was a mistake or not, but I checked out the Wacom website to see what they had on offer. And I noticed that they'd got a nice small A6 sized, it's a wide format tablet. I believe that they're calling this the 4x6 in the US. And this was just the right size to fit on the attachment on the side of my tiny little desk here. Because, as I say, there's not much room in these Tokyo apartments. So I've got a tiny little desk with a little, maybe 25 centimeter square mouse pad sized attachment on the side, which is literally just for putting a mouse pad on and the mouse. But this 4x6 tablet from Wacom was going to fit perfectly on that. So this started to kind of, draw me in a little bit. The price was reasonable, pretty reasonable too, at around $230. And of course, because the Intuos tablets also come with a mouse, it was going to be much easier to convince the other half that it makes so much sense to go for this now, as the mouse was broken. Anyone that's ever spent time convincing the other half how absolutely, totally necessary your next toy is will be able to relate to this. I was starting to think that if I could get a wireless keyboard without a mouse, I'd be well on the way to being able to warrant buying the Wacom tablet and see for myself what all the fuss was about. And with it being so hot in Tokyo right now, I decided that it would be a good time to take my first visit to the huge Yodobashi Camera superstore in Akihabara, which is nicknamed the Electricity Town or Electronic Town here in Tokyo. The store opened a year or so ago, and they have a 400-space car park, so we just sort of could take a drive over there, have lunch, browse the camera floor as well, and then sort of check out the keyboards and the tablets. Well, my missus was on board, so off we went. After about a 30-minute air-conditioned drive across the town, We parked up and made our way from the 5 stories below ground car park to the 8th floor, ate lunch, and then went to the camera floor. It was here that I did something that I really should not have done, which was had a play with the new 50mm f1.2L lens from Canon. This was a big mistake. I've been resisting this lens so far, and I resisted it last weekend too, but this is such a beautiful lens. I really don't know how much longer I'll be able to keep it out of my camera bag. Even with the, when focusing on something relatively far away at f1.2, the bokeh is just amazing. And that's only looking at the images on the LCD as well, but it was really something else. So anyway, dragging myself away from the camera section, screaming and shouting internally at least, we made our way down to the 2nd floor where the keyboards are, and I had a look around and noticed that there are some really cool keyboards around now, and lots of them Bluetooth wireless, so I'd got the wireless thing there. The thing is that I'm hooked on wireless because in my living room, I have the TV hooked up by DVI to my computer. So I sometimes like to just sort of take the keyboard over to the sofa and look at stuff with the other half. I have my TV calibrated too, so it shows photos really well. So we sort of sit there sometimes and go through my final selection of shots from a shoot together. And I really like as well to look at my Lenswork extended CD or DVD from this month on the TV screen. And I also like to watch the Luminous Landscape Video Journal DVDs on the TV as well. And it's always nice to just sort of take the keyboard over there and just have full control of the computer from the sofa and do it all from there. My problem was that all of the wireless keyboards that I liked had a mouse with them. And I wasn't so much worried about the cost, but I didn't really like the idea of buying something, even if it was cheaper than what I eventually ended up with, but then leaving a brand new mouse unused. So I went down to the 1st floor and checked out the Wacom tablet, and I wanted to really see if this thing was going to be going home with me today, and was really quite impressed with the compact size of the 4x6 tablet. They had them hooked up to PCs so I could have a play with them too, and although it felt pretty awkward at first, I figured that after a time I'd get used to this. And the mouse felt a lot better than I thought it was going to do, by looking at it. It doesn't look like that cooler mouse, but it worked pretty well, so I was a little bit surprised there as well. I didn't buy it right now, though, as I was still undecided about all of the keyboards and things, and I didn't want to make a mistake, so I went back upstairs to the keyboards and picked up the one that I'd looked at earlier and that I really sort of had set my heart on. But this still had a mouse with it, and I didn't want to buy a keyboard that didn't match what I wanted. So I was kind of coming around to the fact that I just had to buy the mouse with it as well and bite the bullet. Then, though, I turned around and saw a section on the end of one of the aisles across the way with a Logicool stand with a pretty cool-looking keyboard on display. It was just one keyboard there with, loads of boxes with the actual keyboard in around it. But it was kind of set apart from the others. And when I got closer, I read the name there. I found that it was a DiNovo or DiNovo Edge keyboard, which is one of the new keyboards from Logicool. And I'm going to include a link to this keyboard in the show notes so that you can see for yourself, but the photos don't really do justice to what has got to be one of the coolest keyboards I've seen to date. I don't mind admitting that I'm a sucker for cool looking technology, as long as it's not just looks, but this keyboard excels in both looks and functionality. First of all, it's incredibly slim and has all of those fancy buttons to start Outlook and media player controls. It has a really cool volume control that lights up when you run your finger over it. It comes with a recharging stand that you can just stand the keyboard in to not only charge it, but also to store it vertically, which would be great for getting it out of the way on my tiny little desk. If I want to sort of just bring the tablet onto the main desk. Also, I sort of bring a Mac keyboard up here while I'm recording on the Mac. So it was really going to help me to just sort of get the keyboard out of the way and free up the desk without having to just sort of throw things all over the place as I usually do. So again, the functionality was there, not just from a technical functionality perspective, but from a usability perspective. So anyway, it was all really starting to come together nicely now. One thing that actually used to bug me about my old keyboard was that it took batteries, which needed to be replaced every 6 months or so. But this one has got inbuilt rechargeable batteries. They're fast charging too, taking just 2 hours to fully charge, and then it'll run for 2 months. Or you can get a day out of it for just 5 minutes charge. It also has a touchpad, which basically is an inbuilt mouse. So even when I do take it away from the PC, I have a mouse right there too, which was, again, just perfect, because although the mouse that comes with the Wacom tablet is wireless, it can only be used on top of the tablet itself, and the tablet is connected to the computer via USB, so it doesn't have the portability. As I became more and more sold on the Denovo Edge keyboard, my wife's rolling eyes were confirming that I was, about to do something which is pretty typical of me, which was, again, buy the most expensive piece of kit in the store, out of the keyboards, that is. The other sets, even with the mouse, were retailing at around 1,500 yen or $130. Yet the Denovo Edge was going for 24,000 yen. I said 1,500. It's 15,000, sorry. Or $130, and the Denovo was going for 24,000, which is about $200. But I was sold, because it was so expensive by comparison to the store were going to give me 20% points for this. So if I paid cash, I'd have a lot more points to put towards the tablet, along with the other points that I'd already got on the card. So I was really just no longer able to resist all of this perfectly matched, incredibly cool technology. And I made my way to the cashier and bought the keyboard. Then I went back to the first floor and picked up the Wacom 4x6 tablet too, using my points from the keyboard, other things, and a little bit of plastic as well. Now I was pretty excited about the keyboard. Based on what I'd already seen in the store, I was really excited, really wanted to sort of get it plugged in and have a go with it. But when I got home, after I plugged the charger in, dropped it on the desk, and then dropped the keyboard into it, that seems to sort of turn it on, even if the switch on the keyboard is not on itself. And when I did that, all of the lights lit up, and you can tell that I'm being a real geek here. But it was like a really cool display, not much short of watching a small mini fireworks display on my desk, but really classy looking. And it started to think, how close we are now in the electronics around us to what we've been seeing for years in science fiction movies. The keyboard, this Denovo Edge keyboard is really just like something from a science fiction movie, but classier. This is what really made it easier for me to sort of pay that premium for the sort of the best thing in the store, not just because I'm a nerd and I couldn't resist it, but partly because of an interior design perspective. My PC sits in my living room next to the TV, and when I built a new PC in February this year, I paid a lot of attention to building something that was good looking from an exterior design perspective and not just functional. And I felt like I'd just sort of put the icing on the cake with this keyboard. And if you're still listening, i.e. you haven't got bored silly and started listening to a different podcast, sorry for the rambling on about this, but if you are in the least bit geeky like me, I hope you can appreciate how exciting these peripherals are getting, and what a great age we're lucky to be living in. After I'd got the keyboard excitement out of the way, probably not out of the way yet as I'm gone on chuntering about it for so long here. But I got it out of the way for that day. I plugged in the Wacom tablet and set that up, and I went through the exercises that sort of come with it and the help to get used to using it, and found out that there are a few cool things that I can do in Windows Vista that were, you know, like Jester things to move backwards, forwards, as well as the normal Wacom stuff. And this was a really nice bonus. And I'd say that you can pretty much get away with using a pen for everything, although it's a little bit awkward at first. I'm trying to restrict myself to using just the pen for a while to get more used to it, but there's a little circle of orange light that lights up when you touch the touchpad on the keyboard, and I can't resist touching it every so often. And I have to admit, things are still easier with the mouse for the majority of the stuff, the everyday stuff. So when I get tired of the pen, I drop the mouse onto the tablet and use that for a while. What I'll do is, over the next few weeks, though, I'll start to use the Wacom tablet, give it a good run for its money, working through photos that I start to put together from shoots or things that I wanted to go through from my library that I haven't processed yet. And most of it's going to be just dust spotting and stuff like that, but I'll start to give it a run for its money, and then I'll probably do an episode on my findings in a few weeks to share my thoughts and, you know, whether I thought it really was a good idea to buy this or not. One other thing that I wanted to mention today is that Barnack has been updated. Barnack is a Windows utility that I've mentioned a number of times, and I use it to calculate hyperfocal distance and depth of field for any given focal length and aperture combination. It's freeware, created by a guy called Mikael B. Stegman, and I'll put a link to the download page in the show notes. Now, unless you carry a notebook PC around with you and have it sort of started up and ready to go while you're shooting, Barnack is really not going to be much use in the field. Rather, it's a tool to help you understand the relationship behind all of the parameters that affect depth of field and hyperfocal distance, etc. That is, what I use it for, at least, and I've found it to be really useful for this. In the updated version, we have a few pretty neat changes that I'd like to mention. Firstly, the format has been rearranged. Until now, we've had a landscape aspect ratio with the window, it's been wider than it is tall, but now it's changed to portrait being taller than it is wide, and it looks as though the reason for this is because there are now a few additional graphs that have been added, so it no longer makes sense to put them all on one screen. So what we now have is there's a few graphs, but in place of the original three that have now become five, there's just one square for the graph and five in the pull-down below that. So we can just display any one of the five graphs at any one time. There's also the addition of a blur circle slider that I've not seen before. Quoting here from the help file, it says that the blur circle is the diameter of the disk that covers the area that a point at this, that the image center is defocused over. Hence the blur circle for a perfect lens depicting a subject at the focal distance would be zero. And I have to say that I'm not 100% clear on how this is supposed to be used from this description. On playing with the sliders, though, it seems initially to be showing us the distance at which we need to focus to maintain the size of the circle of confusion. That, you know, because as you slide the focus distance around, the blur circle slider also moves. So it's obviously matching itself to the distance. So it's really the point at which we're focused initially. Then though, from what you can do is you can start to slide the blur circle slider around independently. So I guess what the blur circle indicator is doing there is telling us how much that circle will spread out, albeit getting blurrier and blurrier, as we start to move the circle, or the circle that would be the circle of confusion, from the point at which it's perfectly focused to any point either closer or further away from the focal point, the focus point. So, or I guess I should say the focus distance. So, you know, it's basically going to be blurred once we get too far or too near or too far away from the focus distance. It's going to be so, that single point is going to be so blurred that you wouldn't be able to see it. But I guess this is the theoretical size that it would be if you moved it to, say, one front in front of the lens instead of 20 meters away where you might be focusing. The other cool thing that you should remember about Barnack is that it allows you to open images that you've shot, and it will then grab the shooting data from the EXIF information and set the camera's make, you know, the manufacturer, the model name, the focal length and aperture, etc. Gets it all from the EXIF, so it just sort of bangs that all in for you. And it will also display the circle of confusion in millimeters in the information on the right side too, which will help you to figure out what you should set it to if you're adjusting these settings manual, or if you're using a different program or utility to do this in the field like I do with my mobile phone. I'll put a link to a Wikipedia page on the circle of confusion in the show notes as well, though, as that has a nice table that will guide you to select the best size of circle of confusion for your sensor. Although it does depend on other variables such as the pitch of your pixels, which varies by model, there's also a nice handy clone button on Barnack now, which will basically open another instance of Barnack so that you can load more images for comparison if you want. Anyway, if you haven't tried this brilliant little application, please do so. As I say, I'll put a link to the download page in the show notes. It's all good stuff and really helps you to sort of understand the physics behind our art. So that's it for this week. Once again, sorry if I bored you silly today. I am finding it difficult to keep up with things, especially with the graduate school stuff. So not a whole load of time or a whole lot of energy left to have got you a normal sort of Martin Bailey photography podcast this week. But hopefully, you know, now that the server transition's done, we should be back to normal soon. This weekend wasn't really a time thing, as I said. I was just totally worn out. On Saturday, we did the shopping trip, and I spent some time sort of learning how to use the Wacom tablet, etc. On Sunday as well, I sort of got up, had a relaxed morning, and then one of the other things that took a chunk of time was something that I do very little. I don't watch a lot of TV. I generally tend to sort of take it in while I'm sitting in front of the computer, which is one of the benefits of living in a small apartment, because it does mean that I have everything sort of here in the living room, so I can just sort of look at it out of my right eye while I'm working on the PC. But on Sunday morning, I sort of got hooked on something that I do most years, and that is started to watch the high school baseball matches that are on the TV at the moment here. And I'm not really that big a sports fan, you know, as far as watching it on the TV. I'll watch important football matches or soccer matches for our US listeners, and you know, at the World Cup, things like that. And I enjoy a good rugby match as well, you know, I don't usually get that caught up in baseball matches, despite there being a match on the TV most evenings during the summer months in Japan. For some reason, though, the high school baseball really just captivates me. I reckon it's probably because you can really sort of sense the ambition coupled with sometimes intense nervousness in the 16 to 18-year-old young men that are sort of giving it their all for the team, and for the possible glory of taking the prize as the best high school baseball team in Japan. Anyway, before I start rambling anymore, a quick note that today's the music that I played for, you know, I played us in with and we're listening to now is, let me just check, this is something that's not actually from the PodSafe Music Network. It's one that I bought myself, but I'll plug it anyway. I bought this for the portfolios that I put together, these slideshows, and it's called Amidst the Spinning Stars by a guy called Martin Lass. And with that, though, there's nothing else that I want to bore you stupid with today. So we'll call it a day and have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.